This is an iHeart podcast.
Let's talk about war and religion. Obviously, this is a special about religion, but first, let's get something out of the way first and foremost, and something we all have to understand and accept, and it's hard. It can be hard to understand and accept what I'm about to say. That whole saying of it takes two to tango is not applicable to war, to a fight, to whatever. If one side decides it's war, then it's war. The second side actually gets no say-so in that whatsoever. I don't want to fight anybody. I have a couple producers in the next room. Not interested. I'm 43 years old. My fighting days are over. If one of them gets up right now, walks in here, and socks me in the face, well, it wasn't my call. We're fighting. Now we're in a fight. Communism is at war with you. And communism is a religion. And communism doesn't share space with other religions. It doesn't matter whether you want that to be true, whether you want to acknowledge that, or what your thoughts on it, I'm sorry to say, my thoughts on it, your feelings about it are completely inconsequential. They don't matter at all. The communist has decided it is a religious war, therefore it is a religious war. And let's just do a little rewind on this. Whatever the religion is of the country, when communism takes it over, communists will try to destroy that religion. They will. From the very beginning, in the Soviet Union, I could tell you some horrible stories of what they did to the pastors in the Orthodox churches in the Soviet Union, carving them up, burying them alive, torturing them. Horrific oppression, war, because they understood it was a competing religion. In China, look, it's not just for Christianity, Catholicism, Orthodoxy, not just for that. In China, when Mao's people took over, Cultural Revolution, killing the monks, tearing down the Buddhist temples, war with the established religion. Spanish Civil War, this is during all the Franco time. Part of the reason Franco raised an army and fought them, they were raping the nuns, crucifying the pastors. Communists are at war with your religion. And here's the thing about religions. They're not all the same, of course. I have my beliefs. I'm sure you have your beliefs of some kind. And there are many, many, many religions on this planet and historically that are really okay with other religions. Many of them like that. The Mongols were actually famous for this, believe it or not. As murderous and conquesty, if that's a word, as murderous as the Mongol civilization was, they really were okay with whatever religion you were bringing. They would have Christian churches right next to Muslim mosques. And you ask them, they'd be like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. Worship, whatever. Pay your taxes. Our belief system, we kind of believe in the land and the sun, but you can believe it's fine. There are many religions like that. And then there are some religions that simply will not share space. And that is communism. And communism is here. It is very much here. And they have declared war on us, on our country, on our belief system. And Yuri Bezmenov, remember who Yuri Bezmenov was before I play you this clip? Yuri Bezmenov, he was a member of the KGB in the Soviet Union. And this is what he did. And he went overseas and created revolutions. He spread communism globally. Yuri Bezmenov talked about it. Here he was.
To change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind. Even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible.
That was from the 80s. We are now about 50 years past that. That is what has happened. And what happened was the communists were having a very hard time with our religion here in America. They were having a very hard time with the Christian religion that founded the United States of America. We're not a Judeo-Christian country, although we are welcoming of everybody, most definitely Jews and other religions. Our country was not founded by Judeo-Christians. It was founded by Christians. That was the central belief of the country when the country was founded. They talked about God, they talked about Jesus all the time, and so it became part of our DNA as a nation. And the communists hated it. They kept running into America's bedrock Christianity, and they couldn't get their religion through here. So the communists did what communists do, and they found a way around it. Well, what's the best way around it? If you're running into America's church, America's Christianity, and it's holding back your demonic revolution, what's a way through it? Simply infiltrate the church. I mean, we've got a new pope now. Has all kinds of information out there about why you need to have open borders. Well, you definitely need to mass import barbarians. Remember this short-haired lesbian freak who lectured Trump and J.D. Vance?
In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families, some who fear for their lives. And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in poultry farms and meatpacking plants, who wash the dishes after we eat in restaurants and work the night shifts in hospitals, they may not be citizens or have the proper documentation, but the vast majority of immigrants are not criminals. I ask you to have mercy, Mr. President, on those in our communities whose children fear that their parents will be taken away.
Maybe you're sitting there saying, that's not a pastor, that's not a priest, but you're wrong. That is a pastor, that is a priest. That lady is very religious. She has a belief system that goes beyond her Subaru Outback. She's a communist. She's a communist first. Remember, communists do not share space with other religions. They don't share belief systems, whether they are generals in the military, whether they are presidents, senators, pastors, school teachers. Communism is always their number one. In many ways, they are some of the most devoutly religious people on the planet, because no matter who they are, no matter where they are, no matter what role they happen to be in, they will always place their God first and foremost. If they're making your children's movies, they'll make sure to gay it up. If they're teaching your children in school, they'll have a Black Lives Matter flag in there teaching your kids how evil they are to be white. If they happen to have gone through seminary, they will tell you that you are not Christian if you don't want your borders open and your country flooded with rapists and murderers. They never set their communism aside because they are religious, devoutly religious, and they are at war with you. And you don't get a say in the matter. You can fight them or let them win. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a great special for you. Hang on.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love feeling good all the time. I love feeling full of energy all the time. And here's what we all do. We all reach for what? Another cup of coffee, an energy drink, God forbid, or something like that. Why do we do this all the time? Because we want to feel full of energy, good, excited about work or play or whatever is next. Why don't you get rid of all that stuff? I'm not saying stop drinking coffee. I still drink it, but get rid of the necessity for it and just feel good naturally. That's what Chalk will do for you. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Male vitality stacks. And female vitality stacks. Or maybe you don't want to go with the stack route. Try this. Just try this for 3 months. Get some Chalk Lit powder. And in the morning, glass of milk or a smoothie, just mix some Chalk Lit powder in there. Vitamins and minerals packed full of it. You'll feel so good. You want to join me in that? Chalk.com/JessieTV gets you a big fat discount.
This email, I'm going to end it here, says, basically, I'm accountable to Almighty God because I'm standing up for equality. Well, this is what I believe. You ever seen that movie, Talladega Nights? And you see that section where they're talking around the dinner table and they're talking about what their favorite version of Jesus is. All right, baby Jesus. I love baby Jesus. And the guy goes, well, I love Lynyrd Skynyrd Jesus when angels are behind him and the choir is singing and he's playing Freebird. Well, my day of judgment, I might be standing in front of trans Jesus. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't bank on that. In fact, I'd probably make some adjustments before that day comes, but that's just me. Joining me now, J. Chase Davis, lead pastor of the Well Church in Boulder, Colorado. Pastor, what kind of super freak nonsense did I just watch?
Well, it's straight up blasphemy is what you just watched, but this is what the Democrats in Colorado and elsewhere have become, where they're willing to openly blaspheme and use Christianity to justify all of their wickedness. This is what many people talk about, where the left, what they constantly do is they will hollow out your religion and wear it around like a skin suit. And that's better, no better represented than what we just saw from the senator in Colorado. This is what they do. They weaponize Christian virtue and use it against us. So this is going on constantly up here, especially with House Bill 251312.
Yeah, well, you know what? Let's focus on that specifically before we move on to other things. What is going on with this House bill? Because the Colorado viewers I have email me new horror stories every day that make Colorado sound like California now. What's in the new bill?
Yeah, so the original bill as proposed wanted to criminalize what they call dead naming and what they call misgendering. It threatened to take kids out of parents' custody from parents who did not affirm the child's perceived gender. And so it was an egregious assault, still is an egregious assault on parental rights, on freedom of speech, freedom of religion in Colorado. It effectively threatens to criminalize Christianity itself. So when people talk about Colorado becoming like California, it's actually becoming more rabid than California in many ways. They're trying to make Colorado, their kind of testing ground for all their worst ideas that they're putting out everywhere. And this has been going on here for 20 plus years. There was a whole plan. You can go read their plan and how they accomplished it through lots of money, through big donors, to turn Colorado blue. And so now they've got the majority in the House and the Senate here, and they've got the governor. And so they're trying to ram through anything and everything they can get through in order to defy the new regime in Washington, especially. They're like a dog trapped in a corner, and they're vicious, and they're anti-God and anti-Christian.
Pastor, how much of this do you lay at the feet of America's Christians? As in, were we asleep at the wheel for too long? I get frustrated when I look at Christian participation in elections, when and then the infiltration of the church. Did we screw up?
I think there's been a failure of leadership in the evangelical church in America for too long. Many pastors and Christians of a former generation that either came from the culture wars, whether they liked them or not, became kind of fat and happy on the on kind of their lifestyle. And they're letting these things happen left and right. They've adopted a posture, for many of them, towards ministry and towards kind of public speaking about Christianity and civil matters that is best often known as kind of a winsome approach or a, you know, a faithful presence within. No better exemplified than with Francis Collins, who embraced this kind of approach to the Christian faith in the public square. And so what they've done is they've constantly accommodated, they've constantly bowed down, they've never tried to be forthright about their Christian convictions and the impact it might have on others, and they're always placating to the left. And so as the left becomes more radical, those who are trapped in this strategy of kind of a winsome approach to politics, a winsome approach to sin, whatever it may be, they continue to carve out space for those people in their churches and ministries, cities, towns, and states. And so absolutely the church has been asleep at the wheel. Thankfully, there's a lot of Christians who are fed up with it, and there's a lot of pastors who are no longer putting up with it. Unfortunately, a lot of the big evangelical institutions, no better exemplified than Wheaton College recently, have been just placating the left over and over again, whether it's DEI or woke. And many observers have noted that once you baptize these wicked ideologies, these worldly ideas into the church, it's much harder to get out. It's much easier to get out these policies in a business, in a government, whatever it may be. But once you baptize this stuff into the church, all of a sudden you've laden these worldly ideas with scriptural terms, with biblical terms, and you've justified them as such. So you'll have authors in Christianity and evangelicalism in America writing about kingdom diversity and how it's good, and not just good, but mandated by the Bible. And so for them to walk that back is going to be nearly impossible, because now they've changed their whole understanding of the scriptures to accommodate the radical left's ideas.
No, it happened to me right after George Floyd died. I left my church because we had to sit down and get lectured about our white privilege. And our pastor was, I mean, remains, I'm sure, the kindest, most mousy man you've ever seen in your life. And it was clear that they just ate him up. These cultural Marxists just got that little guy in there and they chewed him up and spit him out. And he was just too weak. He couldn't withstand it.
This is exactly what the communists do. They've been doing it for decades. They called the clergy useful idiots when they were attempting to take over America way back when. And it seems to be coming to fruition here, not only in Colorado, but in many states where they're passing these radical laws rooted in not a God-fearing worldview, not in biblical authority, but in a neo-Marxist framework that talks about oppressor and oppressed and all of that. And so we've seen them just bow to them and make space for them. And unfortunately, what a main problem, Jesse, that plagues the church today is that many Christians and many pastors conceive of the main job of the church is to evangelize the lost. And once you make that the main mission of the church has ceased to be the church. It's simply become a marketing scheme to try to maintain a market share over a population. And so you're constantly pivoting your message not to equip to feed the sheep, not to equip the saints in the body, but you're constantly downplaying sin, you're downplaying the authority of Scripture in order to bring new people, new customers into your big box church. And so this completely tracks with the critiques of the seeker-sensitive movement, whether you want to talk about Rick Warren, who was also out there promoting BLM, he marched in a rally, or other evangelical leaders. They've adopted a view of the church that is not historically faithful and not biblically accurate, and made it kind of a marketing tactic where we've got to reach the lost at all cost. And that includes muting our convictions, downplaying the opposition we have with worldly philosophies. And instead, they just kind of bend over backwards to appease the world so that maybe, just maybe one day, these kind of neo-Marxist people will come into their church and maybe they'll hear the gospel, which quite often doesn't happen and actually happens more often in churches that are rigorous and strong in their convictions. And thank God for that, that there are churches standing strong. But many, many, many churches out here, not just in Colorado, but across our nation, are deeply compromised on these matters.
Yeah, it's wild how the churches that actually teach the Word of God produce better fruit than the ones that don't. It's crazy how that ends up happening. How do we get it back? Because my concern, Pastor, is now, like you said, I've seen some churches begin to rise and stand up against this stuff, and it blesses me to no end. But it's the large, you know, Southern Baptist, all this stuff, the large church corporations, not Southern Baptist churches individually, but the large church corporations seem to be the most poisonous. How did that happen? Is that just money? Is that really what it comes down to? That's where the money is?
You know, it's difficult to assess one motive. I think men, by nature, are born into sin. And so they're assaulted by a variety of temptations. And we know that when these leaders get into evangelical institutions, let's focus on the Southern Baptist Convention, since you brought it up. We're a Southern Baptist church, and we have power brokers and influence peddlers in high positions of leadership in the Southern Baptist Convention, where the main thing is about preserving reputation and brokering power amongst kind of their cohort, their friends. And like I said, this is not necessarily inherently anti-human. It's just the natural way humans relate to one another, friendship and trying to promote one another. But what we've seen is a great deal of corruption at the top. And so the Southern Baptist Convention is a great example. I'm part of an organization called the Center for Baptist Leadership, and we're trying to promote a better Baptist voice in the public square. And unfortunately, that's not receiving any money from the Southern Baptist Convention. That's a startup. We are a startup organization. We're trying to influence Southern Baptists to have a better voice. And yet we see that the organizations that are almost most nefarious actors, like the ERLC in the Southern Baptist Convention, they receive around $4 million a year from Southern Baptist churches. And they continue to get funding. We're hoping to put up a bill to remove them, to abolish them here in June coming up. But the Southern Baptist Convention is a great example of how this corruption has played out. And so the way to beat it back is for pastors to stand courageously and buck the trends that they've been handed down that have led to the demise of Christianity in our nation. They have to lay aside all these methods and strategies and pragmatic solutions to church growth and seeker sensitive, and they have to lay that aside and get back to the Bible and teach God's word plainly that there are sinners that need salvation. There are many sinners that need salvation. I get messages almost every week from people who aren't even Christians yet that are seeing the demonic ideologies run rampant in our streets, run through our capital, and they're going, hey, I think something's wrong. I'd like to check out God and visit church and explore Christianity. And that's the opportunity afforded to many pastors today, but they're going to have to lay aside their strategies. That will require loss. That will require pain, because all of a sudden, if they get up in that pulpit and they say transgenderism is a lie from the pit of hell, and they've never said anything like that before, then all of a sudden they're going to lose some people, because they've been placating these kind of weak-kneed Christians who want to have peace with the world and peace with God. And unfortunately, our scriptures say that's not possible. And so there is a way to do it. We started an organization here in Colorado called Fight 1312. We had just, you know, 12, 16 churches sign up, and we went and rallied at the Capitol 2 days. And with this House bill, what we're seeing, House Bill 251312 in Colorado, just passed through the House and Senate, very amended. And by very amended, I mean it has been gutted. The original things that I highlighted at the top of our conversation, where they're trying to criminalize dead naming and misgendering, and they're trying to take parents out of, or kids out of their parents' custody who don't affirm their child's perceived gender, that's been removed. And so we've seen great effect. We had 700 people, almost 800 people sign up to testify at the Capitol. Unfortunately, the Democrats were shady, and they didn't let us testify. There were only 200 of those 700 to 800 who were for this bill. All the rest of us were opposed, and we gave testimony, and we spoke clearly. And so we're seeing a great deal of fruit come from that. So organizations like the Center for Baptist Leadership and the Southern Baptist Convention, these are great kind of startup entities that are saying, hey, let's take this back. Let's get back on track. Let's get back to God's word. And organizations like ours, Fight 1312 in Colorado, we're saying, hey, we're going to provide an alternative manner to engage the public square. If you guys want to run your winsomeness playbook, where you're never calling out sin, you're never confronting the civil magistrate when they try to behave wickedly, go for it. You know, you're going to continue to suffer. You're going to continue. But we're going to be on the side that doesn't vote for Christian persecution. We're going to be on the side that stands for God's word in the public square. And we're unafraid to do that. We have, honestly, as Christians, we have nothing to lose. Our life has already been found in Christ. We've already forsaken our life for Christ's sake. We're slaves of Christ. And so there's nothing to be afraid of when we speak boldly and clearly from God's word. And actually, when you see that, the lie that the winsome kind of crowd will tell you is that you're going to harm your witness. You know, you're going to ruin the reputation of the church, and that's just not true. You'll get called mean names. They might think you're a bad person. I don't really care that much. I care what God thinks of me, and so that's where I stand at the end of the day.
Amen. Pastor, thank you for getting involved. I appreciate you. How about that? Get involved. Fight the fight. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love my cell phone company because they share my values and they hire Americans. I'm so tired of it. And I know it makes me sound like the old, grumpy, ugly American, but I'm so sick of calling a place that doesn't speak English. You get a hold of somebody on the phone and you got some foreigner on the phone from a call center in India somewhere, and you don't understand what they're saying and they don't understand. Can I speak to your manager? Not at Pure Talk. Pure Talk, not only will your cell phone bill go down, my bill got cut in half. Pure Talk hires Americans right here in America. It takes 10 minutes to switch, and you get to speak with a lovely, pleasant American who just wants to be helpful. You can keep your phone, get a brand new phone if you want. You keep your phone number. There's no reason not to switch. Switch to Pure Talk. Support Americans. PureTalk.com/JesseTV.
Mr. Patel, as you and the president continue to weaponize and investigate his perceived enemies, as you follow this blueprint, when can I, a former impeachment manager, expect the FBI at my door?
Ma'am, you want to know who was targeted by a weaponized FBI? Me.
We know that you likely committed perjury. Mr. Patel, my second question is, should we worry more about your memory or your veracity?
We should worry more about your lack of candor. You're accusing me of committing perjury. Tell the American people how I broke the law and committed a felony. Have the audacity to actually put the facts forward instead of lying for political banter so you can have a 20-second donation hit.
The answer is both. I believe that
the answer is you're failing, not me.
Well, that was uncomfortable. Joining me now, Steve Dace, host of the wonderful Steve Dace Show, author of the book Richie Meets the Rainbow, which I would recommend. Okay, Steve, Kash Patel, that whole exchange shows a lot of things, but it is crazy how the American Democrat has just simply gotten used to this system where the FBI is his. It works for him, it protects him, and it arrests his opponents. That's what they love. That's what they want.
Indeed. And you know what kind of stood out to me about it too, Jesse, is that here Kash Patel is still, and this is, he's kind of still relatively new here, you know, in terms of being a front and center face here of the American right, specifically through the vehicle known as the Republican Party. But we've seen this story before, which is take on all of the detriments of being associated with the right and the Republican Party, be accused of absolutely everything that your base wants you to do, though you're not doing it. All right. And so take the full vehemence of the other side for doing the things your base wants you to do, but not doing, without doing it, and therefore rallying your base to you. I mean, we've kind of seen this before. Now, he's new to this, and so I want to give maximum benefit of the doubt. You and I both know Dan Bongino. I you know, want to give the maximum benefit of the doubt. Dan left behind a rather lucrative enterprise to take on this fight. So I'm going to give them a lot of rope to show me. But I hope Kash came away from that thinking, you know, I'm not even doing what she's accusing me of, and yet I'm taking on all of the, you know, all of the blowback for being exactly what I've not done. You're right. That's going to happen whether you do it or not. So you might as well just go ahead and do it.
Steve, I've been talking endlessly about how red state GOP senators specifically, and members of the House, but senators, they are critical in the communist revolution that is happening in our country, as in whenever it gets really important, whenever there's a real victory at hand, they will step up and step in and snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. I want to point to none other than Lindsey Graham. Here he was.
If the committee decided to, say, increase by $100 million your budget, could you spend it wisely?
I can assure you that any money that this committee thinks
good
sees fit, I promise it'll be good to use.
I believe you. What I want the American people to know is that the budget request for the FBI is below inflation. Do you agree with that?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you very well.
The budget request for the FBI is below inflation.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. After listening to you and everything you say is legitimate concern, you have a lot to do. Do you think the committee should look at increasing your budget?
What we really need are more resources, more than anything
else. Well, count me in for more resources to help you deal with this threat as well as other threats.
Steve, the traitors in our midst are what's killing our movement.
I don't know. I kind of felt uncomfortable watching that for other reasons. It kind of felt like that was a manifestation of sliding into Lindsey's DMs on his Grindr account. I mean, I'm not sure if that was a congressional interview, brother, or whether or not. I mean, that was a come on. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's flirting in some circles. That's not anything close to an interview, but that is what we are surrounded by, are the likes of people like Lindsey Graham. You are correct, and here's the thing, Jesse. I don't know the way out of it, man, because we can't get our people to participate in primaries. Right? That's number one. We can't get them to do that. Right? I've been at this for 20 years, man. I've made every enemy. I've singed, not just burned, singed bridges. Done everything I could possibly do. We really struggle to get our people to take part in primaries. That's number one. Number two, then we get to the general. We know that there's just outright Soviet communists that will drag us, and they'll let us have all our little internecine fights on the right, on our favorite train on the way to the camps. Okay, and so we can't let the Democrats win because we know what they're going to do. We won't. Our people won't participate in Republican primaries to get better candidates en masse. We can't let the Democrats win once we get to the general. So we just keep reelecting these quislings and traitors over and over and over again to die a slower death as a people. I don't know the way out of this, man. I've tried everything I can. I've tried shame. I've tried begs. I've done everything I can. I don't know how to break this cycle, brother. I wish I did, but I don't.
I don't either. The church itself, let's talk about the church, shall we, speaking of traitors in our midst, because we're talking about how communism is a religion, and it very much sees itself as a competing religion with all other religions. Yeah. It always has. Wherever it is, it sees itself as the conquering, competing religion. Why doesn't the American Christian Church acknowledge that?
Well, on the I think there's on the Catholic side, you have seen the Catholic Church has been overrun, particularly in Latin American areas, which is where the new American Pope comes from, by the way, in Peru. And the previous Pope did it, too. But they're overrun with what's called liberation theology. And this is essentially a synthesis of Marxist social theory with Bible verses and good deeds. So a lot of what, you know, when you've heard things like, well, we need these people that are coming here, they share a lot of our values. Well, they might be pro-life, but they're basically pro-life Marxists. They're Marxist against abortion. All right. And so that's what's happened in Catholic circles. They've been overrun by, you know, liberation theology. And then social justice theory has overrun a lot of evangelical seminaries. If that didn't happen, then Rick Warrenism and seeker sensitivism is. And this is, you guys all know what this looks like. You know, this is where your pastor's wearing pleated khakis. There's a uniform, right? Hawaiian shirts, even in January, sweater vests, you know, even in July. Okay, and nicer than God is the 11th commandment that God forgot to throw on the tablet to Moses before he came down from the mountain. And there's a, quote, third way of doing things, okay? And they said things like the Sunday after Roe v. Wade was overturned, that's if you, how do you know if you go to one of these churches, your pastor stood up and said, well, we know not everyone here in the church agrees on this. Number one, why would people not agree that child sacrifice is bad? What are they doing in your church? I mean, what is that being acknowledged? What is that being catered to? What kind of a church do you have? It's not actually a real one. It's a giant corporation with boards of elders instead of your boards of directors instead of elders, and mission statements instead of creeds. And you're not catechizing people. You're just collecting tithes from them. And so this is filtered down now. This is the voting base that we're starting from on a lot of the American right. Because if the pastorate actually understood, or was, I think they do, they just don't want to, if they acknowledged what Marxism masquerading as progressivism really is, which is, as you said, a rival religion, it would compel them to do and say things that might not mean they can have that Pottery Barn church in that, you know, suburban mausoleum and monastery there on that multi-acre campus that does nothing but have its lawn mowed on a Tuesday afternoon. And they might have to actually do their job. You know, a wise man once said, the problem with America is no one wants to put her pastors in prison anymore. And I think that's a pretty good summation of currently where we are at.
Yeah, pretty much is. Speaking of the children, Steve, they are after the children, and they are so purposeful about it. I try to explain to people that pink-haired freak teaching your child in the second grade with the rainbow flag in there is actually a child predator that sought out the profession of teacher specifically so she could destroy your young son or daughter. Talk to me about Richie Meets the Rainbow, by the way.
Well, what you're describing, I mean, again, going back to the fact this is a pseudo, if not outright, pagan religion, they have to have their Great Commission too, right? They have their calls to dominion as well, right? And so that's what they've done. They turn the schools into Satan's youth ministry, and they go there with the intent, the expressed, written, explicit intent of indoctrinating your children. And so I'm a big believer that what the devil hates the most is to be mocked. And so what I thought, hey, what would happen if like St. Paul and Dr. Seuss collaborated on taking down Pride Month? And my best attempt at that collaboration is what Richie Meets the Rainbow is. And Richie's going to learn what's the difference between the six-colored rainbow that he hears about in regular school and the seven-colored rainbow that he learned about in Sunday school. And he's got this really unique thing to help him and to guide him towards the truth and to help defend him against the indoctrination in his schools, Jesse. Maybe you've heard of it. It's called a dad, okay? And we used to have those around here in America. And so he's got this thing called a dad that like actually raises his son and teaches him the difference and stands up to the school board and the schools, right? And that's the heartwarming tale of childhood enlightenment that you'll be seeing just in time for the most demonic time of the year. And if people want to go and learn some more about it before it's released on June 3rd, and then go to richiemeetstherainbow.com. That's richiemeetstherainbow.com. And thank you for the endorsement, brother. I appreciate it.
No, of course, man. I love it. These children's books are necessary. It's very well done. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you. Come back soon, brother. All right. Let's talk about the climate nutters next.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling. without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love sleeping. Sleeping's one of my favorite things. There's just nothing that quite beats. Well, here's why. It's about setting the tone. I love setting the tone. You know, you got date night with the wife. Pay her a compliment right when you see her. It sets the right tone for the evening. Waking up in the morning knowing you had a good night's sleep sets the tone for the day. Everything you face that day gets easier and better. That's why I love Dream Powder from Beam, because I never have to wonder if I'm going to feel like that the next day. It's a cup of hot chocolate. It's delicious. Mine is cinnamon chocolate, only it has natural things in it that will put you to sleep. And when you wake up, not heavy, not groggy, not miserable, energized and ready to go. You want to try it? Up to 40% off. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Again, natural things. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly.
We cannot hide away from human population growth because, you know, it underlies so many of the other problems. All these things we talk about wouldn't be a problem if there was the size of population that there was 500 years ago.
Yeah, that's one of these climate change commie nutters, Jane Goodall is her name, talking about, well, lovingly exterminating about 6 billion people on the planet. Joining me now, Mark Morano, executive editor, climatedepot.com. Mark, I call the climate change insanity communism's final, most murderous form, because it simply is. There's no other portion of this sick, demented religion that wants to kill as many people as the climate change nutters.
Maybe public health is a close second, but you're right. Jane Goodall comes off as a nice old grandmotherly type, and what she's saying is absolutely horrific, wanting to eliminate I don't know, about 80 some percent plus of the entire global population. And make no mistake, when Bill Gates and people like Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum, this is the way they talk and think openly and actively. Al Gore has actually stated that there's too much ubiquitous overpopulation and too many Africans in Africa, and that we need to reduce, that there'll be more Africans by mid-century than there are, like, you know, all these other ethnicities combined. So they're very open about this agenda. They want to cull the population. And of course, several ways to do that: restrict energy, restrict development, restrict your food supply, restrict your freedom of speech. This is what the entire battle has been about. It's particularly, I would argue, since 9/11 in earnest, and then the bank bailout, and then, of course, COVID. But this is what we've been battling, and it's this mentality that permeates our billionaire class and corporate class and elite class.
Mark, I have a weird question, but I really mean it. Are these people just bored? You know, once you get super wealthy, once you get wealthy enough, you don't have all the same concerns in life, bills and things like that. You're kind of free of a lot of those things. Are these just wealthy do-gooders who've run out of things to do, and so they found a new pet project with killing billions of people?
You know, in the case of someone like Bill Gates, yes. But with someone like Bill Gates, in fact, I think RFK Jr. laid it out in his book brilliantly. He called it philanthrocapitalism. In other words, and don't be fooled, Bill Gates is giving away his fortune. The more money Bill Gates gives away, oddly, he becomes worth more. And he controls more. He controls the media. He controls public health. He's controlling climate research. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Here's a guy who just wants to give his money away, but he keeps getting richer and having more power. They're looking for a legacy, this megalomania, and there's a lot of intellectual academic basis for, like, what Jane Goodall said. It goes back to the 1960s. It goes back centuries to an economist named Thomas Malthus, but particularly in our lifetime, it's Paul Ehrlich, who's still alive, warned of gloom and doom. He's now, I think he's like 93, 94 years old. The man who predicted doom for everyone is outliving the odds by decades at this point. But he predicted, of course, that we would have resource scarcity, famines, unless this ruling class came in and controlled us, the unwashed masses. That's what you're hearing from Jane Goodall. That's what Bill Gates is all about. And that's what most of these billionaires are all about.
Mark, Bill Gates, you said he keeps getting wealthier, but we always, like you pointed out, we wake up every day, there's a new headline, Bill Gates gives $10 billion for whatever. So walk me through that corrupt system. Feel free to take your time. How does he throw a bunch of money at some useless project and more comes back to him?
Well, for one thing, public health is how he's making a lot of his money. In fact, you can go back to the COVID vaccine, the mRNA vaccines, and he was promoting it and invested in it heavily. And this is a matter of public record. He then divested and walked away from it. And then one of his first public statements after that is he's talking openly about how the vaccine wasn't durable, it didn't actually work, it didn't stop transmission, it really was not any success at all. And then he admits COVID was very much like the flu. Now, why did he admit it? Because he had already done his pump and dump. He had already pumped tons of money. He got governments around the world to mandate a product he was invested heavily in, and as altruism of giving money out. But then he dumps it, and then he starts trashing the actual vaccine. So he knew when to invest. He knew when to pull out. And this is one of the ways he's, by controlling public health, you don't control, big pharma necessarily, you do, but you also control government schedules of vaccines, government schedules of medicine. And when you're directly involved in that and you're part of selling those to people, that's how you get great, great wealth. And of course, having a monopoly with Microsoft and going through that whole, you know, the whole way he had his whole life story going back to Microsoft. And of course, his father was involved with, I think it was Planned Parenthood. I mean, he is just ultimately, he is a chosen one by this ruling class that has chosen him and several other billionaires. And it goes on. You have people like Michael Bloomberg pushing the net zero agenda. You have Richard Branson, a Virgin Air, investing in the fake meat. You have George Soros. You have the Washington Post owner, Jeff Bezos. All of these billionaires get richer and richer once they get to a certain point because they pretty much own everything. I think the stat was, I can't remember how many companies, but they own most of the media outlets in the world. I mean, there really is no corporate establishment dissent. So when you own everything, you pretty much only get richer and more powerful no matter how much you, quote, give away.
Mark, is the movement dying or is it gaining steam? I can never tell because, as you mentioned, they own all the media. They own so much. Yeah. So the propaganda is endless, right? It's absolutely endless. But at least the people I talk to, I hang out with normal people, I never hear this subject come up ever. It's never once come up, climate change or global warming or whatever the newest thing is. It's not a concern of anybody in my life. Now, granted, I don't hang out with dirty commies, but is this movement dying or growing?
Well, I got to tell you, my headline at Climate Depot, BBC, how the political census on climate change has been shattered. And they're just talking, it's a lot of this is the Trump effect. A lot of it is just the energy rationing and inflation that's gone on. I think we're in a low period, but you can never say it's over. Why? Because you have, since the 1980s, the United Nations heavily invested in this. You have the World Health Organization heavily invested. You have every medical association heavily invested. You have every academic institution in the world heavily invested in the climate scare. You have every billionaire. You have every corporation. You have every science agency. Nothing like that goes away because Donald Trump comes in and issues a bunch of executive orders. Now, Donald Trump is riding a wave of backlash, and we're seeing it in Argentina with Milei. We're seeing it in Europe. They halted their Green Deal. The German elections, we're seeing it potentially in France. We've seen it all throughout the EU elections last summer. I think it's in a low phase, but I think they're going to regroup. You kiss, and if they do, if it is the end of climate, they're going to just shift to something else very similar. At one point, we all thought it was going to be a COVID-like public health climate was going to merge into with COVID, but I think they overplayed their hand so much with COVID that that essentially failed. You're asking me too early at this phase of, you know, of Trump. It depends how things go. For instance, in the United States, unless Donald Trump gets rid of this CO2 endangerment finding from the EPA that's been endorsed by the Supreme Court back when Obama was president, actually when George Bush was president, but Obama implemented it, that regulates carbon dioxide as a pollutant. Unless he overturns the scientific basis, expect it to come back. Unless he submits the UN Paris Agreement as a treaty to the US Senate and it gets rejected, expect us to get back in that with a future president, Nikki Haley, or President Gavin Newsom. So I think we're at the high point of climate skepticism, at the high point of the collapse of this. But it's kind of like the Friday the 13th saga, you know, when you cheer, oh, Jason's dead. He's dead. No way he's coming back for that. He's dead this time. And yet he always came back.
Yeah, he did. Mark, my brother, thank you. I appreciate you very much. Final thoughts next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. I just want to reiterate what I said at the beginning, because I know that was a lot about the climate commies, Steve Dace, the pastor and everything, that we are at war. That's not what you wanted. Well, maybe it is, but whether or not you wanted it is not important. You are at war. America's communists have declared war on your way of life, your religious beliefs, whatever they are. The American communist is trying to destroy them. You have a choice to make. Are you going to fight? Or are you going to lay down? Take it. Go along with it. Well, I mean, Jesus would want open borders. It's up to you. I choose to fight. We'll do it again.
This is an iHeart podcast.